Today on The Next Step, we're going to be talking about, well, Sasnashen, about blessings that have nothing to do with chance, and also taking some shots that might not be too PC. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the emotional, the psychological, spiritual, physical, and everything in between. This is episode number 592 of The Next Step. I'm inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Oh, definitely. The charge is still there. Definitely. It's only been like, what, 8-9 days since we've been back from Armenia? You don't expect it to wear off that quickly. No. Still supercharged, as it were. But we'll be talking about that in the second portion of today's show, talking also about the conference that we just did. We had a beautiful conference about some of the clergy of the 20th century, some of the giants, and I got a lot to share with you about that. I had a presentation that I made about His Holiness Voskin the First, and it was a pretty decent conference as far as the material that was presented. Want to share some of that with you coming up in a few minutes, but start off with, well, something that you may think is trivial, but it sparked up enough, actually a couple people, reactions. It was from last week's story that we had from Sasnashen. Yes, a couple of you, more astute listeners, I guess readers, as it were, picked up Maksena. Maksena, they said, what was that? Was she Russian? Yes, the lady in question is the widow of Martin Kagosyan. And he was the sculptor, passed away just a couple years ago. And he was the sculptor that made that monument in Sasnashen. So his widow, Maksena, Mrs. Maksena, they go by Harutunyan. They don't have the custom of women taking the men's names. See, very, very liberal group of people, right, Armenians? So you would think, yes. Anyway, you'll find that throughout Armenia and in many of the Armenian families, the man has his last name and the children inherit that last name, but the woman retains her own last name. So in this case, Maksena Hartunyan, the widow of Martin Kagosyan, the sculptor who made that beautiful monument in Sasnashen. So we had a chance to meet with her while we were in Armenia. Couple meetings. One was on Independence Day. Had coffee with her and really exchanged some decent ideas about where we're headed with all of this. Not just an opening for youth center, but also the importance of remembering some things that quickly get forgotten, especially the shoot down in Sasnashen. And then she journeyed with us. She came with us all the way to Sasnashen on the last day when we had the opening of the center. So some of you, a couple of you, read in the story about Maksena and asked me, where is that name? Is she Russian? Is she Greek? What is the origin of that name, Maksena? And got to be honest with you, it was the question that I had of her. First time I met her. Yes, it was on Independence Day, September 21st. We were sitting there with coffee, and I said, Maksena, where do we get that name from? And it's kind of interesting because I just did a presentation on His Holiness Catholicos Vazgen I, and his name became an issue too. Let me share that with you coming up in the second portion. But Maksena, you'd be surprised where that comes from. I asked her. She said it is Haig Nahabed's Toruhu Anunne. Haig is the famous descendant of Noah, who was the grandfather of the Armenian people, hence the name Haik, the people of Hayastan, Haik. As you know in Gurapar, or you may not know in Gurapar, that K ending, it pluralizes the word father, Hayr, Hark. It becomes one father or many fathers, Hark. Haik, Hai, Haik. The people of Haik, of Hayastan. So Haik was the grandfather, the original Hayastan, the original Armenian, the first one. And as these stories come about, as the tradition goes, Haik was a descendant of Noah, who came off of the ark there on the mountains of Ararat. So Haik's granddaughter was named Maksena. That's as simple as it gets. It was a wake up for me. I've never heard this name. Beautiful name, isn't it? Maksena. So she was with us, and I just had to share that with you because we had a couple of our listeners ask me, send me an email like, hey, what is going on? Like, who is this person? Definitely was a remarkable woman who was very boisterous too. She came out with us to Sasnashen. We had an opportunity to hear from her. She spoke about what was going on and the importance of remaining vigilant, of remembering what happened there in Sasnashen and this C-130 that fell. I got a lot of response to the article that appeared. I want to thank you all for the wonderful emails that you sent. Very, very encouraging. And especially I appreciated some of you who went even a little farther and talked about the importance of doing something beyond ourselves, the importance of praying for these kind of events. So thank you very much. Really, really well received. I appreciate it. And we've been in touch. In fact, I just heard back from Father Tade a couple days ago from Yeretskin Ripsime. And it is just so beautiful because we have cultivated this relationship now that we get to share with the people in Sasnashen and, of course, in Tallinn. Now, that being said, another one of our listeners / readers picked up on that one line that I threw out. That's my definition for a blessing. And you see, I've shared it with you as Next Step listeners, that definition. This comes back from a long time ago when I was a priest, and one of my, I don't know, he wasn't a student really. He was a young deacon who was serving with me, and he was contemplating becoming a priest. He later became a priest. And one of the questions that he threw out at me, and this is to a young Father Vazgen, and he was a young deacon at the time, and he said, what is a blessing? Like, what is this blessing? We talk about you bless people. What is a blessing? Have you ever thought about that? What is that blessing? What is a blessing? We use it pretty randomly. We say, God bless. It is random, right, when we say God bless, because we don't know what we're asking for. Think about it. God bless. What are you asking for? For a favor? Is it one of those things like we influence God, so God may be thinking something else, and then by invoking his name and saying, God bless, he may do something else? What is that term? It goes back to some of the discussions we had last year, especially in light of some of these public shootings. And we remember it was one of the last shootings that we had, and somebody just got up and said, spare me your messages of God bless. Spare me your messages that We'll pray for you. Let's keep them in our prayers. You are in our thoughts, in our prayers. We don't want to be in your thoughts and your prayers. I mean, look where we're at right now. And it is very valid, especially in light of some of these tragedies. I always have a difficult time with this because, as you know, we have a very, very powerful prayer group. And nevertheless, it always gets to me because people will pray in times of need, of course. And sometimes those prayers are done as if we're going to influence or change the mind of God. And I do have a problem with this because I personally don't think that's what prayer is all about. And I deal with this all the time. Yesterday we had a conference at the Western Diocese. And as I said, the topic was clergymen, clergy giants of the 20th century. And we looked at a lot of them. The last speaker came from Armenia. I was second to the last because I was about Vazgen the First. So it was kind of like almost chronological. There were a few that slipped out of the chronology, but I did Vazgen the First, who was the Catholicos from 1955 to 1994, one of the longest reigning Catholicoi in our church. But after me was Father Zakaria Bahumian from the Holy See, from Holy Etchmiadzin, a scholar in his own right, just an incredible worker, and it was a real pleasure just listening to him. He spoke about His Holiness Gadokhin the First, one of the shorter reigns of any Catholicoi. He became Catholicos in 1995, and he passed away, entered his eternal rest in 1999, a 4-year reign as Catholicos of all Armenians. And in his message to us, in his reflections about the Catholicos of blessed memory, he remembered a prayer that I had not heard, and I would imagine very few people had heard, but he had dug up this prayer. Apparently, while he was ill and succumbing to the illness of cancer, in the hospital, there was also a young girl there who was being cheated of her life for the same illness. She was 19 years old, if I remember right. And the Catholicos wrote this beautiful prayer. I do not have it. I'm sure we could find a copy of it. But he writes this prayer, and it's a praise of God, but not in the traditional sense that you might think. The praise of God in reflection of life, the understanding of the frail nature of life, and the blessings that we are given in life. And he prays this prayer for this young girl. He and her living out their last days in this hospital setting as this evil, this cancer takes over. And I mean, yes, moving, incredibly moving prayer. And His Holiness Gadokhin the First was just a wordsmith. He had an ability to touch us with his words. And so, too, he did with this prayer. But the reason I bring it up is because we're talking about blessings. We're talking about what are those blessings, how do they come, and what is that value of prayer. So many times we think of prayer in the sense that here is our checklist, and God, you may have thy will be done, but I have my will, and if it's possible, can you change your will to match my will? And I can completely understand that, as I'm sure you can, in an hour of need when all else is failing. Yes, you look up at God and you say, okay, I've tried everything I can. I need some divine intervention. And at this point, this is what I need. But our Lord Jesus says, your Heavenly Father already knows your needs. Do not heap up extra words. Your Father in heaven already knows what you need. That's interesting. Right? Dying of cancer. 19-year-old. 70-year-old. I believe His Holiness was early 70s. Dying of cancer. You think our Heavenly Father doesn't know that? Of course He does. And knows what your needs are. And I think this is what I found in that prayer. And I will find it. And like I said, Father Zakaria Bahumian came from Holy Etchmiadzin to deliver this one speech. He was one of the conference presenters. And he quoted this prayer. And I've got to find it. I've got to get it from him. And as soon as I do, I'll be happy to share it with you. But I think that was the strength of the prayer that I heard, that His Holiness was praying in praise, in acceptance, in understanding, not in human terms, but understanding who God is, and relinquishing. Relinquishing to God. Does that mean you don't fight? Of course you do. God knows your needs. You need to know your needs. And you fight. But how can you pray with extra words when you know your Heavenly Father already knows your needs? And that's why Jesus gives us what we commonly call the Lord's Prayer or the Our Father. He gives that to us because it's an acknowledgement of who God is. I mean, isn't that the point of the psalmist saying, be still and know that I am God? In my presentation, I spoke about His Holiness Vazgen I and his incredible optimism, which you automatically need. I mean, if you think about it, and I'll share this in a few minutes on the second portion, the conditions in which he had to lead the Armenian Church. And I recalled this small thing that I had read from, I believe it was one of these personal growth coaches. I want to say Maxwell was his last name. But it went something like this, that a pessimist is one who complains about the wind. An optimist is one who believes the wind will change. But a leader is one who adjusts the sails to pick up that wind. And isn't that the case, really? The difference between optimism and leadership is to lead your life. It's not just a question of being positive about your life, but being able to adjust those sails to pick up that wind and move you forward. And I made the point that that's exactly what His Holiness Vazgen I did. I mean, you know, a pessimist would sit there and complain about the communists. An optimist would sit there and complain about, well, not complain, but would say that, okay, well, one day communism is going to go away. But meanwhile, life goes away too, right? It's the leader who says, let me adjust the sails. Let me adjust myself, my life, to pick up this negativity and move us forward. I mean, think about what we do in His shoes, the entire idea of going through a genocide. And you could sit there and you can talk about that genocide and you could be negative about life. You could say, woe is me, or you can do something about it by adjusting your sails. It's the same story as if your life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Okay, we get it. It's not just about being positive, but it's taking that action. It's exactly what our Lord Jesus Christ demands of us. His mother and his brothers come to him, and they say, your mother and brother are outside. And he says, who are my mother and my brothers? Those who hear the word of God and do it. Okay, you hear the word of God, you pray, but you need to take that action, to take that next step, so to speak. So getting back to the question, what is a blessing? The young student asked me, what is a blessing? And I didn't have an answer. It took me a while. It was a few years ago that it hit me. A blessing. A blessing is luck. Without the element of chance. You hit the lottery, you say, okay, I'm lucky. Why? Because chances are against you. Right? It's like 1 billion to 1 that you're going to hit the lottery. Okay, so you hit it. So you say, well, I'm lucky because the chances were against me. But think about if you had luck and you knew that there was no chance. There was no chance for you not to be lucky. Double negative? Okay. Think of it in this way, that luck is always there because that's what a blessing is. Blessing is God touching you. And there is no chance in that. It's always there. You don't have to look for the opportunity, for the chance that God might be touching you. No, there is no element of chance. It's luck always there. To me, that's the blessing that we've received up in Sasna Shen. That's the blessing that we saw from the very beginning. And that's why I don't believe in coincidences. There was something about it. If you follow the entire story of Sasna Shen, Susan and I are sitting in the primate's office in New York. He's talking about something going on in Nebraska. While we're in the cab after we leave the primate's office, we're getting a call from the primate in California saying that there's something going on in Nebraska. And I said, well, I heard about it. And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, within a month, I am so engaged in Sasna Shen that I'm in a place called Nebraska, which is just as strange as Sasna Shen for the Armenian. If you want to talk about where is Sasna Shen in the world, think about being an Armenian and saying, okay, Nebraska, there was no Armenians. And then we go over there and we talk to the prop wash gang. Next thing we know, we get this small little amount of money to do something for the youth. We get out there. We're able to do it. And guess what? We hadn't heard of Armenians in Nebraska. 2019. Miss Nebraska. An Armenian woman. I'm going, wow. How did that happen? It happens. Pretty women, right? That's right. Miss Nebraska. Let's see, yeah, if you can put a show note on there, put it in our show notes. But all of a sudden, Nebraska clicks with us, right? And next thing we know, we're out in Sasna Shen. We've become an expert in all things Sasna Shen, meeting with people who've been around Maksena, her stories, and it all comes together. Not as a random act of events, but as something that is defined. As a blessing. Those kids that are being helped by this center are receiving a blessing. Not a random act that a priest came and went and did this, no, but a blessing that comes from God. So with that, let's take a break right now, okay? And we'll be back in a few minutes where we'll pick up on the conference. We'll talk a little bit more about Vazgen the First, about that optimism that he had, about the blessings that we have all in our lives, and we're going to put it all together as we always do. Also, we're going to take a stab at one of those institutions. No, not one of the old institutions. I'm going to not be PC. Not talking about parish council, talking about politically correct. We're going to be taking a stab at something that I think needs to be taken a stab at. Okay, so that's coming up in a few minutes. The song of the day, I'm going to dedicate this to an incredible drummer who passed away. Incredible is putting it mildly. He was nuts, man. I've seen videos of him play. Never saw him in concert. Ginger Baker, he just passed away a couple days ago. Legendary, in rock, African fusion. He was the drummer for Cream, legendary group with Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce. So Eric Clapton's sole survivor of that. And then he went on to Blind Faith. And from Blind Faith, I remember there was a group that he had called Ginger Baker's Air Force. Three drummers. Can you believe that? I've seen him play. I've seen video of him. I've never seen him in concert in person, but I've seen him on video where he's using, you know, he's got two arms, he's got two legs, and each of them is playing a beat. Actually, the song we've picked out today is from an album that he has going back home. It's called Ilugron. And I want you to just listen to the drumming on this. I mean, listen carefully, and you'll hear all kinds of stuff going on. Hands doing one rhythm, one beat, legs pounding out something else. It's, I don't know, words fail me when I see genius like that. He passed away this past weekend at the age of 80. Ginger Baker, here's from Going Back Home. Ginger Baker passed away this week at the age of 80. Drummer extraordinaire, drummer unbelievable. That was Ilugron from the Going Back Home album. He'll be remembered for so much, just offering this world some unbelievable. Yeah, that's the word, unbelievable, when you see him drum. And by the way, while we were playing that, I did look up the YouTube, on YouTube, and I did find that video that I was telling you about a few minutes ago. Just watch it, okay? It's a short clip, I think 11 minutes, worth the watch. Yeah, you're not going to understand him. He's very thick Cockney accent, but you're going to love it. I mean, just, it's amazing to see him play. Ginger Baker, he will be missed. Last of the legends in my book. Somebody who I was turned on to back in, oh, the late 60s. Yeah, I know. We go back a while.
the leaden winter would bring you down forever. But you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun.
Ralph Waldo Emerson, American thinker, 19th century philosopher, writer, essayist. Do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. This is how I started off my speech in reference to Vazgen I, the Catholicos of all Armenians. It was somebody who really left a trail, definitely. Left big, big footprints that were very difficult to fill, still are. And I'll share with you some of the thoughts that I shared. I think one of the big challenges for me was translating something like Emerson's statement there into Armenian. There's certain words that just don't come out, like especially like the path, the Janavar. And that's really like a direction or the road, and the path is a little bit different. So I had some challenges in doing this speech yesterday, but I welcomed those challenges. It got me stimulated and really thinking about where we were as a church in the 20th century. I mean, you got to remember that this is right after a genocide. And, you know, I'm sure that many of you have heard that statement that was made by William Saroyan. By the way, I just finished, just now, believe it or not, in my life, just now finished Human Comedy. Wow. William Saroyan, I've read a few things of his back when I was still a student and had not revisited William Saroyan in years and just read Human Comedy. Wow. It was, I mean, I got a few lumps in my throat at the end too. Anyway, highly recommend. So I'm sure you've heard the William Saroyan quote about, you know, do this or that. Our prayers are not heard as Armenians, but to put two Armenians together and they will create a new Armenia. What Saroyan fails to tell you is where they're going to meet. Where are those two Armenians going to meet? And what happened was right after the Armenian genocide, the Armenians that survived went throughout the world to different places. And I'll speak in terms of what happened, the American experience, and I'm sure it's no different than other parts in the diaspora, but from the East Coast to the West Coast, wherever Armenians went, they established a church. And the church became this foundation, the resurrected body, right? I mean, you could look at it mystically. The resurrected body is now standing after a genocide. And what takes place inside of that church is interesting, because that's the place where these Armenians would meet. It was not unusual. Today, obviously, the time has not allowed it. I mean, we're now 110 years from the genocide. But think about in terms of a few years, a couple decades after the genocide. And it was not uncommon to go into a church and find survivors from different areas. Maybe a survivor from Kharpert sitting with a survivor from Sepastia, a survivor from Hajin sitting with a survivor from Erzurum, and talking and discussing. And that's what Saroyan forgot, was that there was a place where these two Armenians would meet, and it was the church. For us in that generation after the genocide, the grandchildren of genocide survivors, we remember distinctly someone like a Vazgen I becoming father, because to us the church was this virtual Armenia. A virtual Armenia, exactly. Exactly that. Because there you would find Etchmiadzin, the descent of the only begotten, that story, that reality, that spiritual oneness. And it was there that you would find the warmth to kindle an identity. Whatever sparks you had of an identity, it would get kindled inside of that church. And so when we look at the pontificate of somebody like a Catholicos Vosgen I, 1955, what was he facing? Well, think about it in these terms, and this is what I wanted to share with the people at the conference, because it's so easy for us to think of Vosgen I or any one of these leaders within the Armenian world. But what was going on post-World War II? What was going on in this world? Well, here in America, there was what was called McCarthyism. Joseph McCarthy, one of the senators, basically created this idea of a blacklist by only innuendo, by only talking, saying that you were associated with a communist. And that destroyed the careers, the lives of so many people. Hundreds, thousands of people were destroyed because of what Joseph McCarthy did. Now listen to this. It creeped up into the Armenian church too. Because it was very easy, because in that entire atmosphere, where if you were associated with a communist, therefore you are a communist. Think about what happened for the Armenians that were pledging allegiance to Etchmiadzin. Where was Etchmiadzin? In Soviet Armenia. And so all of a sudden, you had these links. And the political parties became tuned to that. And what happened is they took advantage, taking advantage of the church. And this is why you have what's called the split in the Armenian church. I don't talk much about it because we don't talk about the hoopla, and that's part of the hoopla. But you tell me, if you're interested, I'll get into it. There's a lot, because I live through it. And that split continues today. It's one of the, it's interesting because someone as great as Vosgen I, he was able to deal with communism. Think about that. With the Soviets. He knew how to manipulate the Soviets. Remember what I said earlier about the optimist thinking about the wind, being able to change the wind, or the wind is going to change? But the leader is the one that takes that sail and catches that wind. And that's what Vosgen I did. He caught that wind. He caught where it was going. Yes, he was optimistic. He knew that the wind would change. But while it was going in that direction, he was able to catch it, to harness it, and move the ship forward. He was the commandeer. He was the leader. He was the head. And when you know, just preparing for this lecture, I was reading so much of his stuff, and you cannot believe how much of his writings is dedicated to the hurt that he had in his heart that the church was split. And it came down to political lines. And he says it straight out. He says the political party got involved, taking advantage because they couldn't manipulate. There was no land for them to manipulate, no country, so they got into the church. And today we have this very awkward situation in the Armenian church. I'm going to say awkward because that's the part we feel. In reality, it's non-canonical. It's illegal. That's right. You can't mince words here. It's non-canonical. It's the canons of the Christian Orthodox Church. Say specifically, in a geographic area, you have one bishop. Well, guess what? In Iran, in Greece, and United States and Canada, you have two bishops. And we use these kind of expressions to get around it. We say one belongs to Etchmiadzin, one belongs to Cilicia, and by the way, there is no Cilicia today, so therefore it belongs to Antilias. And it's bizarre. It's bizarre. Especially now. where there is no communist Soviet state, right? Which was the contention of the political party. Okay, now what's the holdup here? But we know that there's other motives. Now, I told you a few minutes ago that I was going to do something. I was going to get politically incorrect, but it's not about this. This, to me, is very political correct. I'm one of the hardliners. Yeah, you think I'm some kind of liberal nut out here, right? When it comes to this issue, I'm a hardliner because it's the integrity of the church. It's what we believe. It's the integrity. And we have just basically watered it down so much. We've watered it down and we've forgotten that there is a need to have discipline in there. And the discipline is not just listening and being obedient to the bishops, to the Catholicos. It's being obedient to the canons that drive this church. And yes, it's illegal. It's illegal. And you say, well, you know, the church accepts everybody. It's not about accepting anybody. Well, you know, Jesus loved everybody. It's not about loving everybody. We still love everybody. But it's talking about the integrity of the church. Now, I said a few minutes ago that I was going to talk about something that was politically incorrect. And you know where I'm going to hit? It's as I was writing this. As I was writing my speech and contemplating and going, I was reading tons and tons of material. And in Voskin the First, thank God that we have this material that has lasted and come to us, that it was recently, and we're able to read it. It was what was hurting him the most. It was what was killing him deep inside. He was able to deal with the communists. He was able to make that sail so that he could pick up the wind where it was blowing. He knew it was going to change, but he was a true leader. He picked up the wind and he took the boat home. He was able to deal with communists, with Soviets. He wasn't able to deal with the ego of the Armenian political party. And he died with that hurt on his heart that the church was split and is split today. And actually, in my speech yesterday, that's where I ended. I said that if we're going to be honoring anybody today, let's do it with not just words, but let's really look at what his aspiration was. It was to unify. He was a true father. He wanted to unify this church that was hurting. An incredible, incredible diplomat, was able to speak to different people. One who established our relationships with the Vatican, with the Ecumenical Patriarch in Istanbul, with all of the Orthodox churches. I mean, Voskin I was somebody who put the Armenian church on the map. And you know what's interesting is, as we were listening to the other people, and yeah, I'm getting there. I'm getting to the politically incorrect part, okay? As we were listening to all the other speakers, like I said, we had one person that came all the way out from Armenia, another one that came out from Istanbul. She was really, I wish the video would be available soon. I have a feeling it's going to take a while, but as soon as it's available, I will make sure that you get a link to it. It is well worth watching this conference. And the speaker that came from Istanbul spoke about his beatitude, Şnur Kalustyan. A giant, truly a giant, truly a true believer. In fact, I'm just now reading one of his books, The Messages to the Seven Churches, where he talks about an exegesis on the book of Revelation. It was a fascinating conference for somebody like me who I just wanted to hear more and more about the history of the 20th century. But here were some of the parts that really stuck out to me. Where our church was, who the leadership was. It was not a leadership of just church. These were the leaders that were leading the Armenian people. Look, here's a basic reality. Mesrop Mashrots created the Armenian alphabet. And for one reason, to translate the scriptures into Armenian. As a result of that alphabet, we now had a language, we had literature, we had a golden age of literature. We basically established a culture unparalleled. There's a connection there, right? This is the part that we always forget. The Armenian church was that place, was that cradle in which in exile, Armenians would gather together and create their new Armenians. That was the Armenian church. And so you look at the history of the Armenian church in the 20th century. I mean, right after the genocide, what did you have? And yet it was the church leadership. You had Murad Pekyan. You have Isahagyan. Yes, the writer. He's corresponding with Vazgen the First. They're talking about stuff, what's going on, leading the people. I mean, it is so incredible how much the Armenian church was involved in the day-to-day lives. In fact, Murat Pekyan, he was killed by the communists. The next Catholicos that came in, there was only four people left, four members of the Brotherhood left at Holy Etchmiadzin. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? There was only four members of the Brotherhood left. The Catholicos, a bishop, and two priests. The two priests died by 1943. And so in that year, you basically had two members of the Brotherhood, what we call the Miapanutyun. The entire Brotherhood of Etchmiadzin was two people, the Catholicos and a bishop. And how you came out of that, how these leaders took upon themselves this awesome responsibility. And Vazgen I, that's what I was saying, 1955 when he took office as Catholicos. Think about McCarthyism, think about the split, think about being called a communist. And yet, he stood up and he brought us to where we are today. And I also went into a little bit, I talked a little bit about the blacklisting and McCarthyism. I also included a small little segment about the presumption of innocence, because I think this is really what sets the United States apart from many other countries, especially the Middle Eastern countries where many Armenians come from. And so the audience I was talking to yesterday, I needed them to understand what the presumption of innocence means. You cannot just go up to people and say, okay, you're with a communist, therefore you are a communist. Okay, we understand that. But you can't go out there and accuse people of things either. You can't say that you're a murderer. You can't say you're an embezzler. You need to prove it, and the burden of proof is upon you, the accuser. The person who is being accused is presumed innocent and is innocent. This is a very, very important distinction. It's a small one, but it's very important. And you know the classic story. I mean, it's classroom, right? Textbook. You walk into a room and there's a dead body with a bullet in it. And across from that dead body is a man standing there holding a gun, and there's smoke coming out of that gun. Is the man holding a gun, the gun, innocent? Yes. Yes, you have not proved that it was his finger that pulled the trigger. You have not proved that it was that gun that killed, that from which the bullet came out. You have not even proved that the bullet that came out of that gun was the same bullet that killed the man. That's your burden. You have to put that, you have to bring those proofs. And then you can say that this man is guilty. But up until that point, you are presumed innocent. And that's a big, big difference from a system where people say that, okay, we saw the smoking gun in your hand, therefore you are guilty, now prove your innocence. Big difference. And unfortunately, this kind of logic steers clear of the Armenian church, because we still live by rules of the Middle East and have not adapted to the ways of the West, particularly here in the United States. So I needed to make that point. Now, the final point, and I think this is really important. As I was preparing for this speech, I was reading and I was going through so much material, not only on Vazgen the First, but also of what was going on in the 20th century. There is a beautiful, beautiful book by Reverend Father Zaven Arzumanyan, PhD. And this book is available free. I'm going to put a link on the show notes. Do check it out. It's basically the story of the Armenian Church in the 20th century. It focuses on Vazgen the First, but it is on the Armenian Church. And it's written in English. And I highly recommend it. You'll find all kinds of information in there. But as I was studying the last century, post-genocide, you realize how much the church has done. And as I was doing this, I get an email from the Aurora group. Now, you may, Aurora Awards, you may know that next week they're going to give out an award and everything. And this kind of irritates me because we've lost sight. You know, it was the Inner Shoes idea of transforming. But what Aurora did is basically they dumped the spirituality and just came up with this idea. And I think that it won't last because there is a lack of spirituality. We don't learn. We don't learn. We have dismissed spirituality in our dealings. And so all of a sudden, as I'm studying and getting ready for this conference, I get an email from the Aurora group. 100 Armenians that changed the world. Interesting. Mesrop Mashtots is in there. Like, hey, Mess. Hey, Messi. What'd you do? You invented the alphabet? Hey, Mesrop Mashtots was a saint. He is a saint of the church. He was a monk. He was a reverend father. Gumidas. Yeah, he put together some music and influenced Western music. Oh, what? Gomidas was a priest of the Armenian church. That means he hung out in the Armenian church, the place where you guys don't go, right? Because, oh man, it's not cool. No. Gomidas understood the power of the spirit. And I look through this entire list of 100 people. Bizarre, bizarre people. You know, this man invented this, this man did this, and this man sang this or did that. And when you look at the greats, the people who kept us alive, these were the ones who influenced the rest of the world. Because Armenia, the people that were staying alive, and for whom they sacrificed their lives for, these were the people that today are changing the world. I know it's politically incorrect to rag on one of the newer institutions. I don't even think it's going to be an institution. But I'm really getting tired of people ragging on the church and not understanding how important it is. I told you a few weeks ago, we went on a pilgrimage, and we heard people say, oh, well, you know, go and do this and that, and Armenia is much more than the churches and everything. I agree. There's much, much going on in Armenia. And it's not just the churches, the ancient, but those churches are the foundations. And as I shared with you last week, we haven't made that connection. Where when you're standing in that church and you realize for a moment what made this group of people take these stones and transport them to an island and create these magnificent monasteries there? What made these people say that despite all the troubles and difficulties, despite enemies over there, we're going to construct these structures that sing the praise of God? What made someone like Gariki Nijde to map out his strategy, write it out? For God, the country, for my homeland, he writes from the walls of the monastery at Dativ. What was it? Well, that's the blessing, right? That's the blessing I was telling you about. With no element of chance, it is pure luck. Pure luck, no chance. Can you accept that? If you can, you've accepted the blessing. I got worked up right now, but you know what? I love it too much to just let it go. We need to talk about these things because there's a sense of maturity. We need to find a maturity level where we're not just doing things because, hey, it's popular, it's a good thing to do. And, you know, like Kim Kardashian just went to Armenia and baptized her kids. I have heard both sides of it. Hey, she baptized her kids. It is no different than what goes on the streets of Glendale, where I serve every day. People go and they have their kids baptized. Do they understand what's going on? Probably not, but they know that it's a ritual that needs to be done. I don't know what was the motives. I want to believe in the good in people, and Kim Kardashian did that. And she brings along an entourage. She walks into Etchmiadzin, and hey, it happens. But what I'm saying is that we need to get a sense of maturity in our faith so that when we see things like this, when we hear of things like that, we can understand that there is a bigger picture here. And that bigger picture is the one that we're called to define, to enjoy, and to live in that picture. I'm going to take a break right now. We'll let Susie make her announcements. I'll be back in a few moments to wrap it all up, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you for all your wonderful notes that you've been sending me, especially concerning Sasnasha. And yes, it was a truly beautiful event. We're working on the videos. I know, it's just a matter of time, but we're hoping that we're going to get that together. I had to clear out the In His Shoes locker today, and that was a really difficult one. I told you a few months ago that we're looking for space, and unfortunately, we could not find it. We had to clear off our little space. It's life. We've got tons of stuff, including t-shirts that are left over from our conferences, and those we need to figure out what we're going to be doing. We have the Chris Brown paintings. Yes, famous artist Chris Brown. He's done 4 paintings for us. We're dealing with that. We've taken them out of storage now. So we've got a pretty big agenda in front of us. We leave it to God. Always have, and not going to change it now. Okay. So keep praying. and your prayers are always heard and always felt. Thank you very much. And I want to just thank you very much for the entire support you give to this ministry through your prayers, your donations, and your kind thoughts. They mean a lot to me. Let's see, next few weeks I am in a town called Fowler. It is just outside of Fresno. You happen to be there, join us. Last Sunday I was there. Wow, beautiful, beautiful little church, quaint community. And did they know how to do a badaraku? It was beautiful. It's great being with them. This Sunday, well, it's the Feast of the Holy Translators. And if you think I'll be talking about translation as you know it, well, think again. We're going to talk about the translators and what it means for us today. So if you're in the Fowler area, do stop by. Love to see you. That's going to about do it for our show for today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. You can catch us at all the socials and, of course, at the mothership inissues.org. Drop me a line at feedback@epostle.net. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vosken inviting you to look at the show notes today and to join us again next week, when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off power! Top visits.